Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And so I went up to her later and I said, I think you're the greatest salesperson I've ever seen. And she says, oh, I'm not a salesperson. I just like making friends. And that was very instructive.
What's up, storytellers? Welcome back to the Storytelling Lab podcast. This is episode 152, and today my guest is Neil Ford. That clip that you heard is the crux of the whole conversation. The best salespeople just want to help. Now, can you use some sort of hack and some trick and some psychology to maybe make a few sales and be pretty good at that by tricking people? Yeah, I'm sure that you can. Will that sustain? No, especially not in today's world where people can pick up every little nuance about your personality and what you're trying to do because people are intelligent now. The buyers have never been more intelligent, and that's why people crave authenticity, not because it's some warm, fuzzy feeling. It's because they have no time for BS and they can read it a mile away these days. It wasn't always like that, which is why the advertising industry works so well. Here's this product, you need it, buy it, and you bought it. But now you don't believe anybody because you got sold to for so long. And that's why now the best salespeople just want to help. The best content creators just want to add value. The best storytellers just want to engage and move you emotionally. It's not about the end goal. It's not about trying to manipulate you. And if you do that well and authentically, from the heart, from purpose of trying to help someone and add value, the money will come, the sales will come, the conversions will come. That is how you do it in 2024 and beyond. And that is exactly what Neil Ford specializes in. Now, Neil has a background. He spent 30 years in the advertising industry. He understands how to communicate to people. He understands what moves them emotionally. He understands how to tell great stories. But now he uses his platform, and it's quite a large platform on TikTok, almost 400,000 followers, to spread kindness, to create genuine connections, and yes, to teach people how to tell stories. But his mantra, his motto, his slogan is small kindnesses aren't loud, but they echo forever. And that is exactly like that captures his essence so well and so perfectly. It's just about spreading kindness and creating connection and offering value and seeking to help people. And when you do that, business comes. You have to really care about what you do. And that's why we talk about on the show why it's so important to understand what you were designed to do, to put on this earth to do. Because when you find that, my friends, then you do it with that heartfelt, heart-led purpose that Neil talks about. Then you genuinely do just want to help. And then you genuinely do become a great salesperson. Listen how animated I'm getting. I love this stuff so much, and I've been wanting Neil to be on the show for a while. He is so, so good at what he does. Last night, I took a trip this weekend with my mom to Savannah. We had a great time, just me and her. It was her Christmas gift, and this was the weekend that we went. And when we got back to my house, I just put her on Neil's TikTok channel and just had her scroll through the stories. Each one is just a beautiful, poignant story full of nostalgia and empathy. You understand, even though the stories aren't about you and your family, you get it. You connect with it. And that's the essence of storytelling. And so I wish that you would do the same thing, whether before you listen to this episode or after you listen to this episode. Either way, if you go to his page before, you'll want to listen to this episode. If you listen to this episode first, you will then want to go to his page. So I'm not concerned. The two go hand in hand, but I urge you just to spend some time watching 5 or 10 of his videos. They are incredible. I'm so excited to have had him on the show. He did not disappoint. This is chock full of value and teaches you how to tell great stories from the heart in a way that can help you achieve your mission. So this is my conversation with Neil Ford, and I hope that you love it.
Welcome to the Storytelling Lab, where we break down how to get to the heart of your story and the hearts of your audience to leave the greatest impact possible. And now here's your host, award-winning filmmaker and writer, Rain Bennett.
What's up, my beautiful people? Welcome to another episode of the Storytelling Lab, where we help you break down the art and science of storytelling. My name is Rain Bennett. I am your host, and my job is to help you deepen your connections, increase your sales, and serve your audiences better. Every Tuesday morning, I send out a quick storytelling tip to my newsletter subscribers. I show you techniques I've learned along my journey and used in my own stories, as well as those of my clients. But most importantly, I leave you with tangible takeaways that you can apply to your brand storytelling immediately. Oh, well, actually, more importantly than that, it's free. If this would help you, sign up for the newsletter at rainbennett.com/weeklystorytellingtips. Neil, my friend, welcome to the Storytelling Lab.
Thank you for having me. I absolutely love the name, the Storytelling Lab. Perfect.
Well, we break down the art and science of storytelling,
and, you know, which is right on. Sorry for interrupting, but that is an incredibly valuable thing right now.
Yeah, we got to get behind the curtain. I mean, you know what's funny though is when you really break it down, it is human nature. It's so simple, but what do? We overthink it. We overcomplicate it. We make it, you know, it can't be that simple, Neil. It can't just be speaking from the heart and communicating the way people were designed to communicate. There's got to be a trick. There's got to be a hack.
That is incredibly well put. Yeah, although there is like all things, it doesn't hurt to break it down and talk about the fundamentals, because if for no other reason, that you just reassure people that their instincts were right.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I find that to be, as an entrepreneur, as a communicator, a creator, just a constant struggle, right? Is that human drive or desire to overcomplicate things or overthink things. And it's just like, it's simple and you stay consistent, but it, you know, we always want it to be more complicated than it can be. The first place that I saw you, like a lot of other people, I presume, in your current version of your life, the current era, the current season, as they say, was on TikTok. I spent a lot of time on TikTok, and there's not a lot of people in our space that do. I don't think there are some, but LinkedIn and more classic channels, I think, have a lot of that. LinkedIn, YouTube, etc. And you know, speaking of just keeping it simple, what I find, I mean, before I did some research and looked into you, you were just telling stories without a lot of call to actions, without a lot of, I don't want to say motivation, there was clearly motivation behind it, but I want to know what drove you to that platform and what was your goal?
I wish I could say I was very conscious about, like, I had a methodical, systematic approach to trying to build a business. What the real impulse for being on TikTok is that my children never knew my dad, and it really broke my heart that my daughter especially didn't know my pop, because she's so much like him, and he would have been thrilled to know her. And since she didn't know him, I thought, you know what would be fun is to make videos telling the stories of myself and my father so that they would kind of know who he was. You know, because you can tell them about him all day long, but if you tell the stories about what happened, they have a level of understanding about our relationship and what it was like to know him. And one day I recorded a story about my father and I in the California Central Valley in 1969. We'd broken down near Bakersfield in our car. And when I told that story, my daughter suggested, you know, we should put that on TikTok because I think people would get a kick out of that. And when we did, it went legitimately viral. It had like 6 million views. And then that bounced over to Facebook. Somebody else popped it on there and it did like another 4 million. And it was just one of these things where, oh, I didn't realize what TikTok is so fantastic at is feeding people stuff that they may or may not be interested in and then letting it find its way to its audience. Their algorithm is really, really good at feeding you stuff that you wouldn't necessarily go to and then letting your behavior determine what you watch. And that, so I kind of found an audience of like-minded people who loved to kind of reminisce about things. If you forgive me, I think, I don't know if this is true of my audience, but my stories tend to be kind of nostalgic. I don't mean nostalgic in the sense that they all took place in the 1970s, although there are a few of those. I mean nostalgic in the sense that, you know, people aren't that bad. Generally speaking, people are kind of awesome. And by proportion, I would say it's about 97% of the human race is pretty cool. It's just that 3% that we celebrate in reality TV, you know, the human train wrecks. And there were all, and our news media overestimates, you know, how much devastation we're subject to. And I have found that there's an audience for that, for giving people a chance to realize we're not that bad as a species.
Man, there is a lot of evolutionary psychology embedded in that statement of like our draw to the train wreck, but then our thirst, our desire for wholesomeness and wholeheartedness and positivity, because we crave it, especially now, I think even more so. And I think that element of nostalgia is really profound. And it also, you know, makes people think of their own father, their own grandfather.
Yeah. I got a lot of that. Story.
Yeah.
I got so much. And you know, there was something else too, that was incredibly reassuring, which is, you know, they say, don't read the comments. Gary Vaynerchuk is so famous for saying, don't read the comments, because you'll grow addicted to the good ones and that's not a good thing. And then you'll flame out over the bad ones and that's not a good thing. So just ignore them. But I'm sorry. I love the comments, and people are very, they will say exactly as you suggest, which is like, oh, that reminds me of my own dad or my own brother-in-law. And what I discover is that I love the fact that there are so many of us out there that just want to go on the journey with the reassurance that we're not alone. And I find that the saddest thing ever is feeling lonely. And, you know, it's a kind of it's a disease present in our current day in ways that it might not have been in the past. I don't know legitimately if there's more loneliness now, but I can tell you that it's such a sad phenomenon. There's a thing that you'll find on Reddit. It's called Humans Being Bros. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but it is, if you want to cheer up, go watch Humans Being Bros. And about 70% of it is human beings being super good to animals, like saving them from burning buildings, like really going out of their way, risking their lives to get some water buffalo out of the mud. And that's about 70% of it. And then the other 30% is just people being good hombres. And you want to cheer up, go watch Humans Being Bros for about 20 minutes. Baby, you're going to feel good. And you know what you don't want to do? Do not watch road rage videos, because it will have exactly the opposite effect. You will be angry, suspicious. And so what I'm trying to do and what I do is be the Humans Being Bros for the day.
Yeah.
I'm trying to be reassuring, because if you can provoke a smile on somebody's face, or even a tear, but it's a tear because people were actually being pretty decent.
Yeah.
That's a mission that I absolutely love. And I'm not getting rich off of it, trust me. But you know what I found out is that there are things that are more satisfying than money. If you told me I would have uttered that this year, I'm going to go, oh, geez, Neil, thank you for that blinding glimpse of the obvious. But no, it turns out it's true. It turns out you get addicted to just being useful to people, like that. Yeah. They thank you for having stopped in that day.
Well, there's data now that shows that the act of giving, what it does to your psychology. Wow. It's the same concept.
So
you're
true.
You're not donating money per se, but you're donating value absolutely to people that, and making an impact. And those connections are it. Everything that you're saying, dude, I'm about to cry already. We're 2 minutes, 3 minutes into the podcast. Like, it's so true. This feeling of disconnectedness, this feeling of loneliness. And so if you tell a story that makes me feel of my life and I resonate with that emotion that you conveyed, I feel connected. I feel seen. I feel heard. I feel understood.
Wow.
You know,
you've said a mouthful.
I'm getting chills right now. Like, it's so true. I don't even know. I have so much to say. It seems like you're about to say something. So please.
Yeah. Well, so you're a married guy, right? I saw the wedding ring.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So you're married. So, my father said something to me that I thought was so profound. He goes, you know, everybody talks about what do women want? We can't figure out what women want. And men are like, what are men about? He goes, it's pretty damn simple. It really is, which is men just want to feel useful. Yeah. So a wife that makes her husband feel useful, like I like having you around because you fix things. And I don't know about you. I am addicted to fixing stuff so that my wife will look at me like I'm useful, right? Do you know that feeling?
Yes. Can I jump in here for a second? I have a little anecdote, and it's related to TikTok. So just yesterday or the day before, I reposted or I stitched a young woman's video that went pretty viral. She was in the passenger seat with her boyfriend, apparently, and he was driving through a parking lot that he had built. He was on the construction crew, right? And he was showing her things, and she was just like, oh, wow, babe, it looks so good. And all the comments were just flooded with, like, oh, that way to support him, because you could tell that she was just like, what am I looking at? Because she didn't get it. And it was so positive, and I stitched it, and she responded and reposted it. She loved what I said, because I was like, listen, this is so perfect. I was like, I want to give her a shout out so much for how she responded to him, because I was like, ladies, I'll put it in your own words. I was like, yes, I'm generalizing here, but all men generally we're just little boys that want to know we're doing a good job.
That's
And I said, and you let
it's
him know.
It's just that simple.
Yeah, and I said, now let me flip it for you. You know how when you come home from work and you're stressed and you're telling your man, you know, you're venting to him, and he goes into problem solving mode and starts saying, like, all right, well, what can we do about Tina? All right, how we're going to show up tomorrow at work. And you're like, you get frustrated because you just want him to hear you and be on your side and empathize. That's a classic thing. And men, it takes a while to learn that. I have to remind myself every day with my wife. I said, this is the exact equivalent of that for the man. You don't need to really be into what we're showing you. You know, you don't need to know all the details and the nuances. All you have to do is tell us that we did a good job. Just a good old attaboy, pat us on the back, and we are that child again. You know, and that's what the boyfriend in the car, he looked so excited because he's remembering what happened that day when they struggled to, you know, they had a rough day at work, or that day when Johnny was being silly. And he's having these memories. And he just wants somebody to be proud of him. It's the same thing that you're saying. You just want to feel worthy. And like, thanks, babe. You fixed the dryer.
Well, yeah, I'd have done that. But the thing about my wife is she's not easy to impress. Her dad built his house with his bare hands. Like, he was a Polish immigrant who built his house. You know, foundation, you know, masonry, and he was doing it off manuals. You know, this is like back in the 50s, and he's got manuals out on how to do bricklaying. And so this son of a gun that's a pretty high bar, right? So you know, and we have the benefit of YouTube videos now, so I can, you know, I can pretty exactly. much fix anything because I'm just watching a YouTube video.
So you kind of backed your way into it, to TikTok a little bit. And a shout out to daughters, by the way.
Yeah,
that was a great insight. What's your aim now Because you show up there consistently, you tell these great stories. What is the motivation?
Yeah, now what I'm trying to do is, it turns out that I did get a lot of requests for, hey, how do you tell a good story? Because what happened was, I spent 30 years in advertising, and I did thousands and thousands of presentations. And just like a stand-up comedian tuning up their act night after night after night, what you learn is what an audience finds funny. Like, it's no accident that all of those sitcoms in the 90s featured stand-up comedians, whether it was Tim Allen or Jerry Seinfeld or Kevin Leary or whatever. There is a reason. And the reason is, they know what's funny. You know, they've done so many nights, you don't have to tell them. No director is going to tell Jerry Seinfeld what's going to land. Okay. He knows what's going to land. And it's because of the repetition. Well, I did the same thing. I did thousands and thousands of presentations trying to persuade clients to either hire us as an ad agency or adopt a creative concept. And as a result, I sort of developed a kind of protocol, a sort of, you know, list of about 50 things. And what I'm doing now is, I'm using my storytelling in order to hype my storytelling course. There it is, storyfire.net. And it's sort of the accumulated wisdom of 30 years of pitching. And it turns out that oftentimes they're sort of counterintuitive. I'll give you a good example we were talking about just before the call, which is, people often are hopeful that when they take a course like that they can overcome their stage fright. And the first thing I say is, like, hey, if you've got stage fright, guess what? You're normal. You should never be ashamed of stage fright, because there's a very, very good physiological reason why you are experiencing this. It's the same thing as, like, fear of heights. That is a healthy fear, okay? You're not deficient because you have a fear of heights. Instead, this is how your species survived, was being intelligent about things like that. Well, stage fright is a result of, there was no time in nature 10,000 years ago when being alone, surrounded by eyeballs, you know, looking at you, and you are unarmed, there was no time in nature that was a good thing. So your body is saying, get the hell out of there. Okay, so what do you do to combat stage fright? Well, the number one thing is, you just have to say to yourself, I am not to blame for this. What I'm going to do instead is, I'm just going to say, I don't care if I look visibly frightened. I don't care if I'm pitting out my shirt. I really don't. And all that matters is what I'm saying to these people useful to them? Am I providing value? Just stay focused on the value and don't care about how you are coming off. And here's why. That audience is thinking about themselves. They're not worried about you. They're thinking about themselves. If you're giving them value, that's what they're focusing on. I've seen with my own eyes a media director for an ad agency who was visibly shaking. I mean, you got to be shaking pretty hard for you to be able to see it, right? And he was visibly shaking. But because what he was talking about was how to save 20% on your media budget, nobody cared. They were too interested in how to save 20% on the media budget. And you know what happened after the presentation? Everybody wanted to buttonhole this guy and find out more. So you tell me if that was, he should have been worried about stage fright. No, he should not have been worried at all. All he focused on was, I don't think he operated off of index cards, but I think it was practically like that. do you know what I mean? His head was in the right place, which was, I just want to help these people. I want to leave this room better than I found it. And if you do, mission accomplished, nobody cares that you were scared. And you know what else happens, which is, if you can do that enough times, you lose the fear. Just the same way that skydivers, they're not scared on the fifth skydive. Now they're just addicted to the adrenaline.
You know, coincidentally, I saw a debate, we can call it, on LinkedIn perhaps the other day about a similar issue, stage fright. And there were two schools of thought. If you feel that way, let's take the guy you were talking about who was visibly shaking. Do you, in your opinion, let the audience know that in an effort to be vulnerable and connect with them perhaps? Or do you stay cool and just churn through it in your mind and stay professional and, you know, do what you came to do?
I am so glad you have invited me on your show. That is probably the best. That is the best question I've ever heard concerning stage fright. Okay. So this is a way I would do it. If I really am nervous, I would acknowledge it, but only with this as the twist, which is, you'll forgive me for, I'm probably visibly shaking. I am very nervous, but I promise you what I'm going to tell you is of great value. So let me get to that. The beauty of that is nobody is worrying about it after that. In other words, they're not feeling bad for you. They know that you acknowledge it, but you know what else you've done is you have said, but I'm in charge here and I'm going to be useful to you. Like, despite my fear, I'm still in charge and I'm going to tell you how it is. And I thought, I've seen that done, by the way. It's fantastic.
Yeah, because that's the risk that you run, you know, being vulnerable, is that now you lose credibility, perhaps,
right?
or their focus goes off of the wrong point, where now they're thinking about you and they're noticing you shaking when they weren't in the first place because they were thinking about themselves. So it's like you've called attention to something that's distracting them. That's a good twist to it, to still keep yourself in charge, as you say.
Yeah, the jujitsu is, for anybody that is worried about me, about this stage fright, you're looking at the wrong thing. Let me now tell you where the value is. Okay, and that way everybody just goes, I get it. Although, typically speaking, I do not like to surrender credibility. I don't like to go into a room and automatically off the bat surrender status. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. People will sometimes get up in front of a room and they will say things like, this will only take a minute, I'll be quick. Or they will say, I'm not a very good presenter. And here's one for you that may seem a little counterintuitive, but I've started to notice that this is a bad way to start. People will get up in front of a room and they will say, we're so excited to be here. Okay, now here's why that's a bad idea. The first is, everybody says that. Okay, so it's a cliche. So there's no, as soon as something is a cliche, there is no reason to waste the oxygen on it. The second reason it's a problem is when you have said, we're so excited to be here, it actually communicates a loss of status, because the equivalent is kind of, oh, thank you so much for allowing us into your presence. You know, it doesn't have the boldness of coming in there and saying, I'm really glad to be here because what I have to say is going to really demonstrate, or it's really going to be valuable to you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you at the end if you found this valuable, and I'm going to guess you're going to say yes. So let me get to it. Now, the most valuable real estate in any presentation, in any pitch, is the first 60 seconds. That's the beachfront property. And what people often do is they waste it with the, how's everybody doing today? Or something like, we're so excited to be here. No. Steve Martin, stand-up comedian, who was just the biggest thing ever in the 80s, he would, when he came out, the first words out of his mouth were, of course, hysterically funny. He was a master at that. And you need to seize that first 60 seconds to establish, this is going to be worth it. And, you know, Howie Mandel, who's famous for sort of an improv style comedy, I don't know how people are possessed with this kind of self-assurance, but the first night he ever got up and did stand up, this is a story he tells. The first night, he didn't know what he was going to say when he got up there. He did not know. He just got up there and he's standing in front of the audience and there's this very uncomfortable silence while he's trying to figure out what he's going to say. And after a long time up there, the audience sort of laughs nervously. And the first words out of his mouth were, don't laugh, that throws me off. And the jet exhaust of laughter that followed that got him going.
That's so good.
Isn't that great? Don't laugh, that throws me.
Oh my God, that's great.
His first words is a stand-up comedian. Anyway, but I want to dig in harder on this first 60
seconds.
Come on,
baby.
Because the things that you could say are so, think of the freaking awesome stuff you could say. I once heard a guy in front of a room full of car dealers go, "What do basketball coaches and serial killers have in common?" Okay, those were his first words. I thought, that's fantastic, because immediately they start doing the calculus. Everybody's trying to solve that puzzle, right? So in other words, they're interested. They want to know what's the answer. And there's another part of the calculus that's fantastic, which is, what the hell does that have to do with cars? And so he solves two puzzles at once. And it's very satisfying when you solve puzzles for people. They find that really satisfying. It's a great beginning. Another great beginning is this woman gets up and she says, "I lost 50 pounds in 3 months. And you would be really eager to hear the secret." Well, you know, here's the secret in a nutshell. Whatever you're putting in your mouth right now, that's got to stop. And so what happens is they both signal confidence. Mm-hmm. They come out and they're just really super confident. I had this guy, I was in New Orleans with my wife. We were on the waterfront and it was so obvious we were tourists, because this was back before cell phones had cameras. And so I literally had this old Besseler top, like a 35 millimeter camera hanging from my neck. So it's obvious I'm a tourist. And I hear this guy go, "Hey, those are some nice shoes. Where'd you get those?" And I turn fully expecting this man to be sort of looking at my wife's feet, you know, like he was like some kind of creep, right? But he's looking at my shoes, which is just an ordinary pair of Nikes. And he goes, "Yeah, I like those. Where'd you get those?" And he's a little down at the heels. So I'm pretty sure he's a panhandler. And my wife is 100% sure that he's bad news. But I don't know for sure, so I want to be courteous. So when he says, "Where'd you get those shoes?" I'm like, and before I can answer, he goes, "Oh, wait, I know where you got those shoes." And I go, "I don't think so. I'm from out of town." And he goes, "No, I know where you got those shoes." And I go, "I don't think so." And he goes, "I'll bet you $5 I can tell you where you got those shoes." Okay, so my wife knows it's a con, and so do I. But my brain is, we're on vacation. I wonder if it's worth $5 to hear the punchline to this joke.
Yeah.
And I'm on vacation, so I go, "Yeah, okay." And he goes, "You bet me $5? And I go, "Yeah." And he goes, "You got those shoes on the end of your feet." And I went, "Oh, okay." So I'm reaching into my wallet. I'm going to get my wallet, all right? Now, the wallet gets about halfway out of my pocket. And my wife goes, "You're not going to pay him." And with my wallet starts to sort of inch back down into my pocket. And the guy goes, "It's cool, man. A lot of fellas let their woman tell them what to do." Right. So I'm snapping that wallet out. Right. I'm right.
He played you
now. Oh, he not. Oh, wait, God. It gets better, because
I'm here. I'm all here.
All I had was a 10. That was the smallest bill I had.
Oh my God.
So I pull out the 10 and I'm sort of looking at him like and he goes, "I don't make change." Okay. I give it to him. Okay. Now, if you really deconstruct this, that was a magnificent illustration of status. And you should never surrender status when you get up in front of a room, because what he did, if you really deconstruct it, it goes like this. He starts by, he has deliberately targeted a couple. And the reason he's deliberately targeted a couple is he will get that money out of me if he sells me my own self-respect. Right. That's, in other words, this is not he's not asking for a dollar. He's not poor mouthing and acting like a pathetic waif who needs money. What he's doing is he's challenging me to a duel. So he starts with, "Where'd you get those shoes?" So right from the jump, he says, what you're wearing on your feet are appropriate for me. We are of equal status. I can afford just what you can. Then when he says, "Where'd you get them?" And I'm starting to hem and haw, he goes, "Oh, no, wait, I know where you got them." So in other words, "Oh, don't worry about it, man. I already know. Like, you don't have to tell me.
You don't have anything for me." Right. Now, perfect. Now he's already started to tilt the scale.
He's inched himself above me as a kind of like, "Oh, you don't have anything for me." Then I say, "No, no, no, you don't." And I'm trying to restore the balance, but he jumps me back and goes, "No, I do. No, you don't." "Yes, I do." And then he takes the real leap, which is, "I'll bet you $5. He's challenged me to a contest. And when he wins, when he not only wins, but he has outwitted me. He's outsmarted me. I'm the country bumpkin and he's the slick guy from the city. When he's outwitted me, if I'm any kind of man, I have to pay him because I jumped in. And when my wife says, you're not going to pay him, and he says, you know, it's okay, a lot of fellows let their woman tell, what he's saying is, this is a panhandler, mind you. I have a wife. I have a job. I'm on vacation. I have all the money. He's a panhandler. But he's saying, I pity you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Masterful. Right? So that taught me a lesson in power, that when you go into a room, if you have the role of speaking, then clearly there's some value you're going to deliver. So don't surrender status. Instead, just go in with the knowledge. This is going to benefit you people. You need to hear this. And I'm going to do it with a smile on my face. I'm not going to act like a pompous jerk, but neither am I going to say, I'm so excited to be here. No, no, no. I'm not going to say I'm excited to be here. I'm going to say, hey, this is going to work. You're going to like what you hear today. I got some good news for you. And that, I think, is a really powerful tool for anybody that's going to be speaking in front of people. Don't surrender status. So let's go back to where you cleverly thought of, look, the business about if you're nervous, do you acknowledge it or do you not acknowledge it? I don't have a problem acknowledging it, provided that what I'm doing is I'm saying, despite my shakes, I guarantee you this is going to be worth it. Mm-hmm. Now you've grabbed hold of this and said, despite my shakes, I know what this is for. You know, I think there's a kind of a fantastic thing about not being too slick in front of a room. Not being too slick gives people permission to take your side. But as soon as you are super slick, they're a little spooked by you. They're worried that this is going to be zero sum and they're going to win and you're going to lose, especially if you're there to sell something. You don't want to be too slick. You want to be friendly, avuncular. You want to be confident, but not because you're going to fleece somebody. And that is a nice little tightrope to walk.
There's a couple different directions I want to go here. I think I'll follow that thread about the sleaziness. I am so, I don't know what the word is, not baffled, but like so many people that I meet that come from a world of advertising, which can have to some people of that feeling of like, you're trying to sell me. I don't like that, you know.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So many of the people, many of them that have been on the show, are these heartfelt, forward humans, right? That love connection and love storytelling, that find themselves in that space. I'm interested in learning a little bit about what drew you to that. You spent 30 years in advertising.
Yeah.
And in advertising, you might be, I don't know what you were selling, right? But you might be selling something. I mean, I don't know. But what was it in you or in your life or whomever influenced your life that drove you to that world that made you love it and appreciate it for that long? I'm assuming you did if you worked in it for that long.
Yeah. Advertising, it was a very different animal 30 years ago than it is now. Mm-hmm. It was vastly much more like Mad Men than today, which now it's algorithms pretty much Facebook and Google have eaten the advertising industry. And then the last crumbs on the plate were eaten by the holding companies that own all the advertising agencies. it's a little bit like private equity taking over a business. You know, they get their 15% off the top to pay the debt and so on. But it was kind of show business light when I was in it. And it was filled with energetic, clever young people and very wise and intelligent older mentors. You know, the thing that is painful about the changes that took place in the agency business was that when I got into it, it was quite common to have somebody in their 50s giving you very earnest and helpful instructions on the way to conduct yourself in a meeting and what an appropriate wardrobe would be for this occasion. And, you know, I mean, all of that stuff, the little things that add up to making you feel more confident about what you have to say. And mentorship in business is a vastly underestimated, valuable thing. And, you know, I'll tell you something else from somebody who has now crossed over, you know, I'm not retired, but I might as well be, right? It is delightful for somebody my age to take on a 25-year-old and try to help them along. It's delightful. It is so much fun. And you get to live the life of a coach who watches a champion athlete become a champion. It's so satisfying to watch somebody that you care about succeed. And that whenever I hear somebody bagging on Gen Z or millennials, I go, you ignoramus, you don't have any idea what you're talking about. This generation is so media savvy, so clever, so ahead of the game, so adept at the new tools that will help them in the world. You fool. You are throwing away an opportunity to make a relationship that will benefit you and them for decades. But I went off topic on you. I'm sorry about that.
No, you're fine, dude. This is free-flowing conversation. Don't you worry about it, Neil. I agree with you about the ostracizing, if that's the word, of the younger generations. It happens every damn generation. Like, we've seen the story told over and over.
They did
it. I'm a millennial. Boy, we got it good. I mean, people still refer to young people as millennials, and I'm like, we're 40s now. Like, and they still be like, the thing about millennials, and I'm like, what are you talking
about? It's so ignorant. I, you know, the pleasure to be had from generational contact in a workplace is, unfortunately, it's a lost art now. You know, it doesn't happen as much in the ad business in particular. There's like three people at the top over the age of 50 and everybody else is 25 because that's all they can afford. And they kick you out as soon as you start to make too much money. But can I tell you that your real question was about sort of, hey, how did I arrive at sort of my philosophy when it came to storytelling and so forth? And I do want to tell you one of the stories, which is perfect for this, because these little things that will happen to you along the way and they'll be instructive. And I was at the New Jersey State Fair. I was working on the Toyota account, and Toyota was launching its new full-size Tundra. This was back when they first introduced that thing. Mm-hmm. And this was the first time Toyota had gotten into the big truck business. And up there in Northwest Jersey, where they have the state fair, it is country. I mean, it is retired hippies and rednecks. And it's bib overalls, and everybody looks like the cast of Duck Dynasty. So we're up there, and they got these three gals at a Toyota display where they've got this big Tundra, and the gals are giving out cowboy hats with the Tundra logo on it. And they're giving them to anybody that will let them do a walk around. You know, they want to tell them all about the features and so forth. Two of these gals are just model gorgeous. And the third is this vivacious pixie. I think she was all about 5 feet, but she just had that magic dust. She couldn't wait to share this truck with people. And so these old boys, in their bib overalls and their long beards and their gimme caps from Ford, like, no kidding, one of them had a Ford hat on. She goes out to them with these hats and says, hey, fellas, you guys want to take a look around the new Toyota Tundra? I'll give you one of these hats. And this one guy says, I wouldn't look at that truck if you were handing out gold bars, sweetheart. And she, without blinking, she turns to the friend and she goes, oh, I've seen this before. He's scared. He's scared he's going to like it. He doesn't want to know. And he's just, you know, he's acting out of fear. And the friend goes, is that true, Dale? Are you acting out of fear? And he goes, I ain't scared. And she goes, talk is cheap, Dale. But you can prove me wrong. You can just let me take you around the truck and you'll prove that you're not frightened. So the next thing you know, they're walking around the truck. So I heard this and I'm thinking, oh, lady, you're good. You're really good. Let me see what her patter is. I want to hear how this goes. She's showing him this and that and showing him all the features, and she's really good and she's funny. And then finally they get to the door, the back seat of the D-cab. It's gigantic. And she opens the back seat. She goes, Dale, look at the size of that back seat. And he says, is it big enough to have sex in? And she gets this look on her face and goes, I don't know. Let's check the owner's manual. And I'm inside of 20 minutes. They are walking around that fair wearing the Tundra cowboy hats. And I'm an ad guy. So I'm thinking, how many ads would I have had to have shown those guys to get them? And the answer we both know is you could show them ads until the year 2050 and they still wouldn't change a jot. And so I went up to her later and I said, I think you're the greatest salesperson I've ever seen. And she says, oh, I'm not a salesperson. I just like making friends. And that was very instructive because she wasn't in it to sell them a truck. She just wanted to make a new friend. And to me, that's the nub of a great pitch is I just want to help. Can I, would this be of interest to you? You know, and she had that energy of somebody that didn't care if they sold it to you or not. She just wanted to see if it was interesting to you. You know, can you imagine that gal as like a kindergarten teacher or a sheriff?
The themes that we keep coming back to, they're all the same. Like this is the person having stage fright that doesn't want to give up their credibility. This is the panhandler who's like, it's a power game. Right. What you just said about her is like, she just wants to help and she doesn't really care if you buy or not. She's just trying to help. Like that's such a I don't want to say mind game because of the connotation, right? But like,
well, it's a mind game for her. A mind game for her. So here's what I mean. Like, suppose they just don't stop being nasty. And by the way, those old boys, when they left, because I didn't do the whole conversation, but here's what did happen with Dale. Dale started out kind of obnoxious and a little sexist and belligerent. He didn't want to know. By the time he left, do you know what came over him? Do you know what behavior changed us on him? He was very well-mannered. He was thank you, ma'am, and... Or no, he called her Miss, but he started out as sweetheart. And when he left, he was calling her Miss. And I thought, you know what you did? Do you know what you did, you little pixie? You brought out the best side of that guy. He became a better man in your presence. And, you know, that was the thing. That was the effect my wife had on me. I became a better man around her. Mm-hmm. And that's a powerful thing.
Absolutely. And in the process, she took the respect that she deserved. I mean, going from sweetheart, which is a little bit demeaning, it can be, you know, there's a thin line there.
Yeah, he didn't mean it nice.
You can be earnest with the term sweetheart. I'm from the South, but I know how he said it. I heard it, you know, but Miss is a hat tip sign of respect. And so she leveled up for sure. That's a great story. I want to go back to the point of the 60 seconds that you had to kind of grab someone's attention. And to the point kind of Gen Z and how things have changed these days. So you hear all about the hook, right? The hook, the hook, the hook. You got to grab people's attention quickly. However, when I see most of your stories, you're not jumping out in front of everybody being like, you know, blah, 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 blah. You ease into your stories. And I want you to tell me why that is just as effective as the, you know, real fast in your face, like, you guys are never going to believe this, ... you know, that you might see on many social media channels.
Yeah, so I probably would be more successful if I did better hooks, but my intention is for you and I to be having a beer and we're just having a conversation. And in the end, I'm playing a long game, which is I just want to reach out there and see if people are on the same journey I'm on, which is you kind of can't go wrong if you're starting a presentation on a story. They'll give you a long driveway as long That's as true. It's a story about somebody. So, for example, I can say, that my dad and I were driving from Los Angeles to Oakland in our 1960 Oldsmobile. Back before cell phones, back before call boxes on the highway. And we get to the bottom of the grapevine, and the next thing you know, the car loses its water pump, and we have no coolant, and we are, it's June in the California Central Valley, right about noon. So we are about to have to walk 9 miles in high heat. Now, that is not a hook. That took me a while to get those words out. But you recognize that this is a story, and this is the beginning, and it's going to have a middle and an end. And there's chances are there's going to be a payoff, because a story isn't worth telling unless it has a kind of moral at the end. And so what I'm doing, and what I recommend in any presentation, is if you start with a story, like something from your life that you found instructive or valuable or that you'd wish you'd known before, that audience will go with you for that period. And just a little statistic that I've learned, which is if you can keep their attention, if you've got them in that first 60 seconds, if they're paying attention for 60 seconds, they'll give you 10 minutes before they check out. You know that how people are in big meetings now. Everybody's got their phone below the table, and it takes some doing to make sure they're not checking their email. Well, the brilliant thing about a story is they want to know how it comes out. And the more compelling your characters are, the more likely they are to wonder what happened to them. And so it's my own experience is that stories about your real life experience are valuable to other people because they remind you that you're not alone, that other people are experiencing the same thing, that we're subject to the same mistakes. And we are, particularly stories that are reassuring about how good people can be to one another, those are really powerful. Everybody wants that. Can I land a statistic on your audience that I think might be kind of interesting? It's not a statistic like, you know, from the Yale University study. It's just this. I'm in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And when you drive on the 405, which is our main artery on the west part of the city, 405 freeway in parts has literally 16 lanes. It's 8 going both ways. In that circumstance, when you are driving along, you are going to pass or be passed by approximately 250,000 cars in an ordinary drive. In that experience of being on that highway with 250,000 other people driving death machines, how many times are you cut off by a dirt bag or close to death? It's surprising if there are 2 jerkwads or 3. But that proportion of 3 against 250,000, if that isn't a testimony to how good most people are, right? The statistic is there's very, very few dirtbags. The problem is we let one spoil our day when what we should really be doing is marveling at how I only ran into 2 jerks today. Thousands and thousands of people walked by me and, you know, I ran into at the gym and there was only 1 jerk. Most people were pretty cool. And what I find from that statistic is I just keep reminding myself, if you run into somebody that's having a bad day and they're a jerk to you, it might not be because they're a jerk. I mean, right down in their soul. It might be just that you don't know what they ran into earlier. You know, they could be down to their last nickel for all you know. Don't assume that they're, you know, Joseph Stalin.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, the term hack gets thrown around a lot today. It's definitely a life hack to assume or give people the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
Right. It definitely, for you, like, it's so much more helpful for your journey to just,
right,
like, you know, maybe they didn't mean it that way.
You're the big winner when you grant other people grace. You're the big winner.
Absolutely. Why should one learn how to tell stories or seek to become a better storyteller? Is it only for a business use or business purpose, or what's the why behind learning the craft?
It certainly is good for business purposes because people need to know there's a human being on this side of the transaction. There's a couple of reasons for that. And it's funny, one of the little truisms that we learned in the advertising business is when love is involved, money is no object. When they just like you, you can charge good prices. You don't have to discount to the bone when people like you. You've experienced this. I've experienced this again and again, where we had to replace our water heater. It was 24 years old. It had given us valiant service 12 years past its lifespan. When we replaced it, I took bids on it from three different plumbers, and I wound up going with the most expensive guy because I just liked his vibe. I just thought, I'll give you an example of why I liked his vibe. He said, look, I've done a bunch of these, and I have to tell you that my boss would be furious if I recommended one over the other, but you're crazy if you don't do this version, you know? And I thought, I like it. I like being straight up recommended. Like, this is what I'm going to recommend. I've done a bunch of these things. You'd be crazy if you're doing it. It's like Amazon Prime. You're a lunatic if you don't use Amazon Prime. Right. Okay. So in business, it's clearly the ability to tell stories turns out to put a human being on your side of the transaction. That's very reassuring to people. They find that they like hanging out with you and so forth. Okay. Now let's talk about non-business use case of storytelling. In your life, the sweetest thing you can do for other people is to make them feel seen and heard and make them feel like they're not alone. The loneliness, I don't think people are aware of how devastating loneliness is to their physiology. I can't remember where the study is, but it's the feeling like you have no friend, like there isn't even a single friend in your life, is worse than smoking a pack and a half of cigarettes a day. And I think you and I would both recognize, yeah, that makes sense. Because to go through life without a friend is what is the point? It's really devastating. I saw a video literally this morning of there was a bird species that had gone extinct, and they had footage and sound of it calling out in the wilderness for a mate and getting nothing in return. And I was devastated by that video, thinking that may be one of the saddest things I'm going to see all day, is calling for a mate and there's nobody there. Stories are a way to communicate that other people identify with, that the journey is not, they're not facing life alone. And yeah, you can have a million questions about what it means to be human, and you can't yet decide what does this all add up to. But when you can just communicate, this is an experience I had, and this is what I learned from it, or this is an experience I had and I don't know what to think about it. You know, what do you think about it? It makes people feel like the journey is together. It's best had together. And I find that powerfully reassuring for both the teller and the listener. And when you're good at storytelling, people want to hear them. And it helps you win friends and influence people, in the words of Dale Carnegie.
And obviously we don't have the time for a masterclass today, but if somebody, what are some things people can do as soon as this conversation is over to become a better storyteller, just changes they can make now?
Yeah, I'll give you some. Oh, boom, here we go. So here's an easy one. I want you to get yourself a notebook, and I want you to start writing down things that happened to you, because you're going to find that in the course of a day, there's going to be three or four things that happened to you that are actually worth building a story around. Little things. I'll give you a great example here's what I'm always telling everybody. I put it on a card because I love telling. It's the bad stuff that happened to you that you learn from. That is a very valuable thing to, like, every time something sort of bad that happens to you and you write down what you learned from it, two things happen. One, other people are going to benefit from the bad thing that happened to you because they'll know what to avoid, or they'll know what silver lining there might have been in this bad thing. And the second thing is you're going to stop looking at that as such a tragedy, because what it turned out to be was useful to you in the end. You're going to get more value out of learning from the bad thing that happened to you over the course of years. I promise you, you're going to get way more benefit that happened to you than not happened to you. And when you keep a notebook of all these things, like possible stories, I love this, the selfie pose, strip club psychology, that's going to be a great video. What happens is you start to look at life as a journey that you can share. And then it becomes an opportunity for you to communicate to other people things that are valuable to them about, and they're not alone, and they're on, you know, the human journey is one we all share. That's the first thing, is keep a notebook of things that happen to you. Look at bad events for decode them and deconstruct them for what you might, how you might benefit, or just things to pass on to your protege or your children. That's one thing. And then another thing that people often underestimate when it comes to storytelling is they often think, what I want to learn about storytelling is not what to talk about, but how to talk about it. I venture to say that you need to spend more time thinking about what stories do you tell. Those are the things that communicate about you. What do you think is important? And what is your attitude towards life? The anecdote that I often tell is this. This really happened to me. I had gotten two flat tires. I drove over a curb on a U-turn, and I hit the sidewalls on both my left tires, stripped them flat. Boom. That was the bad news. The good news was I did it within a half a block of a tire store, which is fantastic. So I was kind of ambivalent about the whole thing. I mean, you know, tires are expensive. So I'm sitting there and I'm going, well, this could have been a lot worse. You know, I could have been miles from anything, but instead I literally limped into this tire store. Okay. Now I'm in the waiting room while they're putting new shoes on my car. And this woman, or there are two women, and the women are almost identical in appearance. They have the same hairdo. They're the same age cohort. They're dressed roughly the same. In a police lineup, it would have been easy to mistake one for the other. Okay. Now, one woman is on the phone, and what is she doing? She's complaining very loudly about a bad experience she had in a restaurant. And apparently the waiter got her order wrong twice, which is, you know, unforgivable. And she thought that the waiter had done it deliberately, and there was a big kerfuffle, and she tried to get the waiter fired, and the manager wasn't having it. And she, you know, lost a very good pair of expensive sunglasses. Okay. All right. She hangs up after this, you know, diatribe. And then not 30 seconds later, the other woman in the waiting room on my other side says, you know, I went to a restaurant today and I had the most delightful experience. I was having coffee, and out the window, I noticed this young woman walking along with a very, very big dog. And she saw there was a man probably in his mid 80s. He was very reluctant to cross the street. You know, you could tell he was teetering a little bit. And without even thinking, she went up and grabbed him by the hand, and the two of them walked across the street together. And the dog patrolled the sidewalk the whole time to make sure that no cars interrupted them. They get to the other side. And then this was the part that I loved so much. They had a short conversation, and then they took each other's hands again and just walked on from there. Isn't that wonderful? And I thought, yes, yes, it is. Now, I bet you that woman deliberately told that story as the antidote to the bile and the vitriol of the first woman, right? She had deliberately chosen to improve my day by pointing out something wonderful that had happened. And everything about their demeanors was a 180. She was sweet and nostalgic, and she wasn't farting her grievances into the world. She was telling me the story. And here's what I thought. I go, who would I rather spend the afternoon with? Mm-hmm. And it's pretty obvious. So this is why I say what you choose to talk about very much determines the sort of start of everything. And what you want to talk about is uplifting things, things that improve the room. Like when I see a TikTok video and somebody's complaining about Gen Z or millennials, I have zero time for you and your farting your grievances into the world. You ignoramus. So, anyway.
Well, I think that's almost our time today. Neil, I wanted to ask you a question before we go. You know, you had mentioned this earlier. You said that you're almost retired, I think was the word that you used.
Well, I have every right to be, but I'm not. Yeah.
Fair. Okay. I'm picking up what you're putting down. So I'm always curious of what... I find that people, when you ask what they're excited about, what's coming up for them, they're in one of two camps. Either they are at a pivot of sorts, or they're launching something new, or they've found a place where they are happy, comfortable, successful, and they are really just trying to ground the foundation. And I'm curious which you know, where you are in 2024 at this should be retired stage?
Well, what I am doing is I'm doing a lot of storytelling coaching for business. Okay. And I do it under this, you can see it right here, storyfire.net. On storyfire.net, I sell an online course, which is very good. I say that with confidence and pride. And
even though your knees are shaking.
No, in this case, they're not shaking because, and I'll tell you why it's why I consider it so good and why I have no problem selling it hard. And that is that it is the accumulated wisdom and experience of 30 years of pitching people on things. And what you eventually distill back to is the fundamentals that are timeless. This is not some gimmicky new age thing about, no, this is old school. This is the Stoics and Dale Carnegie. And what it allows for is, look, if you are interested in capitalizing on establishing better relationships with customers and prospecting with the right attitude and hoping to bring a lot of value to the people that you do business with, this is a really, really nice way of getting better at that. And, you know, I sort of have three tiers. It's very inexpensive for what it is, but the top tier of it, which I call StoryFire Pro, we do monthly calls live and we answer each other's questions and we talk. And it turns out that's where the real traction is. That's where people really get a lot of value. So that's what I'm doing now.
That's exciting. Well, I hope everybody takes you up on that. I think they can have a lot to learn from you. One of the things I think we talked about hooking people, but I just wanted to say, I think you land the plane better than anybody I've seen on your stories, which is equally, if not more important than the hook. Obviously, you have to get their attention, but sticking the landing is so, so important. And your stories always kind of just build and build and build and build and build. And then that one little... right at the end just puts that cherry on top. So
thank you for that.
I love your stuff, man.
This is kind of a thrill for me to meet somebody who knows how the game is played. So you appreciate that. I feel like I'm in the batter's box with a major leaguer.
Well, that's really the whole point of the show. I mean, you're probably on a lot of business shows or something like that, talking about storytelling. But yeah, this is what I get the joy out of, because I know the power of stories, and I want to dissect it for people who aren't on the inside baseball, right? They don't really understand that, because I nerd out about this stuff so much. I genuinely love it. And, you know, the themes and the concepts are the same. We revisit them pretty much every episode, but everybody's unique take and unique approach is so great, because that's going to communicate with a specific person out there in the audience, right? Mm-hmm. Each person, you know, is going to find their right community and audience that resonates with that particular approach or perspective. And that's what I'm trying to extract from story geniuses like yourself, sir.
Man, this has been such a pleasure.
Yeah,
I mean that genuinely. This one has been different, and this is huge. Fun.
This is by far the best one you've been on. I mean, that's what you're saying. I get it. It's okay, baby.
Kinda.
In quotes, that's going to be like the pull quote for the episode. Best podcast ever.
Don't
been
get
on.
Me in trouble. Don't get me in trouble. No, hey. But it is. It's such fun to be talking to you about this, because yeah, thanks, you man. Get it. It's nice.
I appreciate it. Likewise, this was a great, great conversation. I appreciate you so much.
All right. Cheers.
My name is Rain Bennett. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed that episode, do us a favor and subscribe to the podcast. If you're already a subscriber and you're enjoying the show, give us a review and let us know the value that you've gotten from it. We love to hear from our listeners and learn about the benefits that they're getting from the show. That's what fuels us, and that's what fuels the show. And if you've already subscribed and you've already reviewed it and you think there's someone else that would benefit from listening to this show, please share it with them. The more we grow, the more we can help you grow, and that's what we're here to do. Join us next time on the Storytelling Lab. This podcast is a 6 Second Stories production. 6 Second Stories is a story coaching and consulting company that builds online education, in-person and virtual training, and digital products that help businesses master storytelling to find their ideal customers and market to them effectively. You can learn more at 6secondstories.com and purchase the book 6 Second Stories at Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, or RainBennett.com/6secondstories.
Hey, Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.